better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3558 of the Survival Podcast. Saw a little bit of chatter going on there, wondering if something was wrong or you in the right place, whatever. We're just late. First, I said we'd be 10 minutes late. Then I said we'd be 15 minutes late. And we ended up, I guess, about 18 minutes late. Sorry, guys, but a lot going on right now here in the Survival Podcast home studio. Getting some stuff out you'll hear about today. Real quick, as we lead off today, before I even talk about what we're going to talk about today, just a reminder, the workshop tickets for the TSP 24 fall workshop go on sale on Saturday. And it's nowhere near as big a deal as like a rock concert, but I want you to think about if you want to come, getting tickets is like getting tickets to like the rock concert of the year from a competition standpoint. If you are not logged in and ready to go on the Telegram group and click the link and get your tickets on Saturday morning, the 21st, this weekend, you will not get a ticket. I'm telling you, they will go that fast. Last year, when I dropped that link, it took exactly 2 minutes and like 37 seconds or something, about 2.5 minutes, and it was done and gone. I don't say this to market it. It's sold out every year since the first year we did it in 2011 was the first workshop we ever did, and it's sold out, right? So we've never not sold out. So I do it more so that I don't feel as guilty when somebody says, but I got there at 15 minutes after they went live and they were all gone. Yep, and I said that. So just a reminder one more time, Saturday morning, it goes live, and you have to be in the Telegram group or channel to be able to get a shot at a ticket or two this year. Real quick on that too. I do allow you to select more than quantity one. If somebody selects like 300, all of them, whatever, I will give you your money back and you don't get to come. I allow two because some people want to come as a couple and it's kind of a make or break it thing. Like if I can't bring my wife or my husband or my partner or whatever, I'm not coming. So that we've had that happen, like one leggers, like the guy gets the last ticket and he can't get one. So we decided to go ahead and do that. But that is all. Quantity two maximum. Any cheaters, you just don't get to come. All right. With that, what are we going to talk about today? Well, they tried to kill Trump again. I actually thought it was bullshit yesterday when I heard about it. We weren't really dialed into the news cycle on a Sunday. We generally aren't. My wife and I did a bunch of yard work and some stuff for the workshop as far as food go and all. So we just kind of heard it on the news channel when she flipped through it. And it sounded like shots near Trump. And it could have been anything. It could have been like some guy out in the street shooting at another guy. Who the hell knows? They like to blow everything out. Turned out, no, somebody tried to get close enough to shoot Trump armed with a scoped rifle, albeit an AK, not exactly a smooth operator's first choice. And the shots that you heard actually came from the Secret Service. We'll talk about the larger implications of all this today. Then we're going to move on to something Putin just said early last week. And I haven't heard anybody say it on mainstream media. And I don't know what you call it. You know, in medicine, we would call it malpractice. As a journalist, I guess, you know, malfeasance, what have you. This is something you cannot ignore. It's something you cannot ignore, and it involves the intentional use of a word that is a lie by the media. The word is permission. The word is permission or authorization, and both of those words are a lie when it comes to long-range strikes inside Russia. You need to hear this. You need to understand this, and the small-minded people around you, they need to hear it too and understand exactly what we're playing with when we're playing with fire like this. Literal freaking fire that we're playing with. Also, I saw an article today on X that I didn't read because it's behind a $300 paywall for a premium subscription to some sort of real estate bullshit. There's no recent articles on it, but I found one from last fall, which is probably where the statistics are anyway. Do you know that almost 40% of Americans today own their own home without a mortgage? Like they own their home outright. Of people that are homeowners. That's not all the people in the United States. It's not the kids. It's adults who are homeowners. They either have a mortgage or a paid-off mortgage. 40% of people that held a mortgage at some point do not hold a mortgage anymore. Sounds great, but we'll talk about how it actually plays into this whole deraveling of society that we're witnessing around us right now. And it's good for the people that have it. Don't get me wrong. I'm paying off your house, I'll never tell you not to. But I'm going to explain to you how it actually will probably be part of our downfall. It shouldn't. It should be one of our greatest strengths, but we seem to have passed the desire to utilize things as strengths, and we just want our side to be right. And so we'll talk about that. How about this? I recently saw a post about an apartment that you could buy, right? So it's more like a condo in China. And it was, oh my God, it was macked out. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And you could buy it for about $180,000 US. And my initial thought was, yeah, but what does the average Chinese person make? And let's adjust this based on U.S. median income and Chinese median income. Well, so I was sure that most people in China make dog shit for income. Turns out I was wrong. Turns out, now it's China, so we have to be careful with how much we trust information. But turns out the median income in China is now higher than the median income per individual in America. And it's actually really hard to determine this. Because if you look up the median income in China, you will find the median income per individual. And if you try to look that information up in the United States, they don't want to give it to you for the individual. You have to figure out like what percentage of people are single and which percentage of people are, you know, two people to a household to kind of come at. But it comes turns out that the average American today, or the median income in America, is a little bit less than the median income in China. Now, when we get to it, I'll explain why it's not that cut and dry, that median is the middle, not really the average. And the lowest income people in China are probably well below that of the lowest income in America. But if you're basically a working professional in China today, you have economically a better quality of life than a, you know, working professional in the United States today. Now, there's a lot of other things you give up, right? I'm not saying we should do it the way China's doing. I'm saying this is part of the problem we have. Whenever you say something that's in any way positive, or not even positive, just honest about other countries, people say, you're a shill for G, right? Or some stupid shit like that. Like, we cover the Putin thing. I'll tell you about a guy that said, I'm supporting Putin by saying, hey, you should better listen to what the man with a whole bunch of nuclear weapons is saying. That's not support. That's called fucking honesty. We'll also talk about how, like, some good news. Homeschooling continues to grow at a rate that is now creating headlines that when I told you there would be headlines like this 3-4 years ago, some of you told me, Jack, I think you're going a little bit overboard because you want it to be true. And I have to say, of all the types of predictions I make, ones like this are the ones that I actually want to be true. I actually hate most of my predictions coming true. It makes me sick and nauseous to see something I've said is going to happen and watch the pieces begin to fall because most of it's bad. This is good, but it also has some negative implications for the economy and society as a whole. And it's something we need to understand. And then we're going to finish today with why I personally believe, given all the shit we're going to talk about today, this country is closer to a civil war right now than it has been at any time since the 1860s when we actually had a civil war. In fact, I would tell you that we are at a point of divergence where I believe we either will have a civil war or we're probably going to end up within the next few decades with a peaceful secession or breakup of some of the member states that don't want to do this shit anymore. And it's not me being a Texas secessionist that just believes in a myth or some shit. I honestly feel this way. And I think there's, you know, people talk about Texas because we have certain assets, let's say, that would allow us to stand alone as a nation. But there's plenty of states with a relatively small coalition of 3 to 5 states that could do the same thing. And people say things like, well, if that happens, then Texas gets vaporized or something. We don't live in the 1860s, even though we have an environment a lot like the 1860s. What type of political will and what type of political reality awaits? Oh, we're going to nuke Texas because they don't want to be part of the country anymore. And what does a Supreme Court decision that says, well, you can't do that mean when a state says, yeah, but we did? There's a fundamental reality coming to a head here. And I'll just say that if somebody told you this about the Soviet Union in 1984, when all the indicators were there that it was about to happen, I know what happened. I remember what happened. They were called crazy. And I was a little kid, so I believe those people were crazy. Then I joined the military, left the country for a couple of years, and when I came back and watched my first Olympics after it, I was like, how the hell does Lithuania have an Olympic team? I didn't even know it happened. They didn't tell us a lot when we were deployed into Central America. So things can happen really, really fast when they decide they're going to happen. History waits for no one, but it's pretty clear where we're headed many times if we pay attention to the past as to the future. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So we have a big lineup, so we better get into it. So let's go ahead and hit up our sponsors of the day real quick here before we move on. How about the Freedom Trinity Seminar? This is from John Bush at Live Free Academy. There are three things that you can link together where you can do business in legitimately what you would consider a parallel economy. Some people oversell this. Some people are like, yeah, if you do this, you can make meth in your backyard and sell it. There's nothing anybody, no, it's not that good, right? It's not that separate from the state. Not that I think you should be cooking meth. I'm just saying there are limitations to what this can do for you. But it is so much better, especially for people that want to be in certain aspects of the economy, like healthcare, like food. We just did a show a few weeks ago on how to start a food club and use ministry and a lot of these techniques to be able to do things that a competitor down the road from you just can't do if you do it the right way. Now, one thing I'll tell you about John Bush, if he puts together something like this and he tells you that it will teach you the right way within the limits of what's possible, it is going to do exactly that. Check this out. This was originally done live, but they have now made it kind of an evergreen thing where you can take it whenever you want to. It's no cost to just take the basic seminar. If you want more after that, there's a paid upgrade for it, but you should check it out. Next up today, the thing you should check out is Canine Academy from Joel Riles, also behind Fortress Canine, one of the best dog trainers I've ever met in my life. And I know a little bit about the canine mind. I did a show on dogs and the way dogs think. I guess it was about 7 years ago, and one of my best friends, he said, he told his dad to listen. He's like, if dad is not the kind of guy that would normally listen to a podcast like mine. He said, Dad, I think you'll like this. And when he was done listening to it, what he told my friend was, wow, someone that actually knows how dogs work. So I know what I'm talking about when it comes to dogs. So when I tell you Joel is the man, he is the man. You need to check out canineacademy.us. Get signed up there. If nothing else, take the free problem-solving library. And then consider if you want to maybe take the basics course or some of the other options. The core obedience basics, that's where I recommend everybody go right away. If you treat core obedience to your dog, you can teach them anything else you want. And if you don't teach them core obedience, guess what? You probably can't teach them jack diddly squat about anything else. So with that, let's go ahead and start on this subject about what happened with Trump. Unlike when I came back to you guys after the weekend, with the first assassination attempt, which sounds weird as shit, doesn't it? Like, here we are, like, what, 70 days later, and we're talking about assassination attempt number two? We don't have anywhere near the amount of information available to us that we did then. I am really pushing people toward, like, Nostr technology and things like that for freedom, but right now, you know, X, Twitter, call it what you want, has the network effect, and the amount, the pure volume of knowledge that was dumped there way ahead of the media was huge. And because it was a public event with cameras from many angles, we were able to ascertain things that if the media had wanted to, they would have been able to, which showed us that they didn't. We still have assholes saying, well, maybe Trump was just hit with a piece of glass, even though there's literally no evidence of that, right? This was private. There's, to my knowledge, there's no video of anything. There might be, but they haven't released it if there is, and they probably won't if there is. Because Trump was playing golf. Trump's playing golf, and all of a sudden they hear shots pop off. So when that popped up on the news media yesterday, this is the other reason. I didn't even know that it was legitimately an assassination attempt till I woke up this morning and my wife had like read on her phone about it and said, yeah, hey, look, this is actually an assassination attempt. They got a guy in custody. Oh, and he's got, like, significant connection to Ukraine. Not official connection, but, like, Ukraine is very important to him, and we should all be sending soldiers there to fight the war for the Ukrainians. And things like that. If you look into some of the videos that are circling of this gentleman talking prior to this event, not like a manifesto or anything, just his normal everyday shit, he's pretty emphatic about this. In fact, one of the videos I saw of him, when he was talking about the need for us, all the countries, to send troops to Ukraine, he was choked up to the point of almost crying. That's how attached to this idea he was. So you hear there were shots fired, but the president was never in any actual danger. Now, that's subjective, but I would call it accurate reporting as to the shots fired. Why? Who fired the shots? Does anybody know? The suspect fired, as far as we know right now anyway, zero shots. The Secret Service actually did its fucking job. Imagine that. And they actually surveilled the places that were most likely where you would worry about somebody coming to try to kill Trump. And when they did that, they saw a barrel sticking through a fence. And they're like, well, that's not right. And they did their job, which is, there's somebody trying to kill our protectee. We should kill their ass first. So they shot at him. Now, apparently they missed. He was probably well concealed. And if you know anything about ballistics, even a well-placed shot, even a caliber you would think, around you would think would get through, hitting something like a chain link fence can completely change trajectory. So dude hauls ass and abandons everything, which, by the way, was probably, depending on, like, did he wear gloves? Are these weapons registered to him? And registered is not the right word. I hate when people use that word and I turn around and use it. Is there paperwork somewhere, like the purchase paperwork, that shows that these were his weapons? Because what you don't want to get caught with is all the stuff. So he abandons everything, jumps in his vehicle, and hauls ass. Some guy sees it, calls 911 immediately, and says, I saw the guy, he's in a vehicle that looks like this, and he's heading that way. So the Florida State Patrol and local PD, like, floods the area, the I-95 corridor, and they catch this guy really quickly, honestly. After this all went down, they have him in custody. No final shootout, no blaze of glory, nothing like that, which is useful because at least now there's somebody to interrogate. And it's not, well, we think that what he was doing is, but eventually, if he'll talk anyway, this is what he said he was doing, because he's not getting out of this. He is getting convicted. I'm sure his lawyer told him to shut his mouth, but eventually he's going to tell everything that happened and try to cut some kind of a deal here. And the reason he may be able to get that deal is because he never actually fired a shot. He could say, I was thinking about it. I went there with the intent to do it, but in the last minute, I decided not to. And that's why when they shot at me, I didn't shoot back. There's all kinds of ways to play that. And Plant Propagation USA says he's available for now. Oh, yeah. There could be, you know, an accidental suicide. But I want to talk more about the cause of this. Everybody's like, deep state actor, deep state actor. Let me tell you something about if you had a deep state actor. What you would have is somebody far better trained than this ass clown. That would be capable of making the shot and be able to pull it off. If you had a true pro in either of these scenarios, Donald Trump would most likely be dead. I think in this case, maybe not. Maybe not. There's at least a possibility of no. But honestly, if you really want somebody dead, I don't care how much protection you put around them. If you really know what you're doing, that person is dead, especially if you're willing to get caught or shot. If you're willing to die for the cause or be captured for the cause, you're probably going to get that person. So I'm actually more worried, like wondering, like, what's actually at play in this? And I do think the deep state's involved. See, this is the problem. When you don't agree with somebody's full crazy-ass conspiracy theory, you're saying, oh, it's nothing. No, I think it's exactly what I said about the first shooting. I think that there are people in our government that want Trump gone by any means necessary. They keep amplifying this bullshit through the media. They keep repeating, you know, there's a lot of shit to criticize about Trump, but they keep repeating absolute lies. They keep telling you that five officers were killed during the insurrection. First of all, it wasn't an insurrection. It was a riot. And absolutely no police officers were killed during that event. There was a cop who died the next day of like a heart attack or some shit that happened to have been injured there. But the injury is not the cause of his heart attack. Like, he was a guy with, you know, people have heart attacks all the time. He probably had a, you know what I'm saying? He probably had one of these, right? You'll have to look it up on the video if you're listening to the audio of this. And how do you know this? Because if they won't say the names of the people killed by illegal aliens and shit, will they? But if there were five officers, they would say those five names over and over and over and over and over again. And that's why, like, say Trump blew the debate. Yeah, he blew the debate because he missed so many open shots. When Kamala Harris said there were officers killed that day, he should have turned to her and said, name them. Name them. If this is so important to you, tell me who they were. What were their names? Because there would have been no answer to it. Well, I don't know off the top of my head. Yeah, because they don't fucking exist. Right? So I think what's going on is these people are agitating this. I do think they're seeing it happen. I do think this guy probably was known to the fucking FBI. Again. Right? Known to the FBI, period. Again, period. Yeah? And I don't think it's like a complete lay down on the job thing. I mean, the Secret Service did their job, but I'm going to tell you why. It has to do something with, we've talked about before, called the Iron Law of Bureaucracy. And the Iron Law of Bureaucracy was authored by Jerry Pornell, who's now gone. He was a modern philosopher, thinker type person. And he said, in any organization, the people dedicated to the organization itself, they will rise to the top and they will write the rules and the control. They will become the bureaucracy. Yeah. And the people dedicated to the mission will never get to that level. And there'll be this line drawn between them, this iron line, where the missions will never be in control of the organization. They'll be stuck down at lower levels and never get to make the rules and things. That requires ass kissing and things like that. The Secret Service, though, those people who are missions in it, they really are. You don't go to get that job unless you are willing to die to protect the President of the United States or any other dignitary you're assigned to, regardless of how you feel about them, or you don't take the job. It is one of the biggest commitments a person can make on the planet to say, I want to do this. Those men and women care about what they do. Again, I'm talking about the missions, not the bureaucrats. And what almost happened this summer is a black eye that they do not want repeated. And so those people are hypervigilant, but are there enough of them? I mean, Brandon already came out and said the Secret Service needs more help. The fuck does that mean? Maybe it means, hey, if they're getting that close to him, they might get that close to me, you know, or her or whatever, you know, because this is starting to flare up emotions on both sides. I think that they're purposely ginning this up. And if he gets popped, they're going to be like, oh, it's a tragedy like that. I really do. I think it's that fucking bad. I think these people are rooting for someone to take out the orange man. And it's disgusting. And if there is a reason to vote for anybody, that's it. That's it. People say, but Trump sucks on this and sucks on that. They all suck on a shitload of stuff. But anybody the people in power want gone this bad probably is the better choice of the two that you have. And that's what you have. You have a choice of two. There is no third choice here. There's no option three. Right? Kennedy never was, but he's made sure he's not. If Kennedy won in every state, he's still on the ballot now. He wouldn't have enough votes to win, and he ain't going to win one state. That's why he took the pragmatic approach that he did. But I think they are trying to get him killed versus trying to kill him. And this is why I feel that way. If they were trying to kill him, he'd already be dead. It is almost frightening how easy it is to kill anybody, no matter how much security they have, if you actually want them dead. Especially in a country of like America with so much freedom of movement. It takes nothing to get into this country now, does it? Right? People come into this country all the time, no paperwork whatsoever, in and out. This ain't Russia. It's actually hard to get into Russia or Hungary or many countries in South America to get into that country from outside. Difficult. Right? And then to get around and do things, there's, you know, places where they stop you and ask you what you're doing and why are you here. America can go anywhere you want. If you want somebody dead in America and you're willing to take the risk, you can have them dead. Which, if you think about it, other than supposedly Iraq plotting to take out Bush Sr., we haven't had people trying to do this shit since Reagan. Since Reagan. And if we go back to Reagan, the guy that did it to Reagan didn't give a fuck about politics. John Hinckley didn't care that Reagan was a Republican. John Hinckley wanted to kill the President of the United States. So he wanted to kill Carter. And then he didn't get to Carter. So when Reagan was just the next guy, like, oh, I can go get this guy. Because he was nuts, right? And he thought that Jodie Foster would fall in love with him. So if we go back from there, we're going back to Kennedy. That's how long we've had before, you know, people were really trying to kill the President of the United States. And I think that has something to do with the deep state, too. I'm just saying. So all of a sudden, we have two assassination attempts in about, what, a month, two and a half months? We have two assassination attempts on one former president who's also a candidate. This is articulated implant. And if somebody did this and took a pop shot at Biden or Kamala or any like major figure on the left, even if they didn't get a shot off, even if it was something like this second attempt here where like they were just there, you would hear nothing but that and how that makes them a hero from now until the end of the year, even past the election. It would be wall-to-wall 24/7 coverage. Here they're like, oh, well, this thing happened. It's too bad. Well, let's move on. Oh, no. Anyway, that's the approach they're taking to this because they want it to happen. 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 And this is a very dangerous place. And that's why I'm bookending this with the Civil War portion we'll talk about at the end. If one of these people pull this off, do you think the fanatical supporters of Donald Trump are just going to be quiet about it? Just accept it? Just let it be and just say, oh, too bad? Or do you think it might really flare some anger in people that are already at the edge? The other thing you need to understand, the reason I brought up the fact that it's been so infrequent that somebody actually tries to kill somebody like the President of the United States, yes, if you really want somebody dead, you can get them dead. But trying to kill the President of the United States is, or somebody under Secret Service protection is a really great way to end up with your head exploded all over the ground. Like, you might get it done, but you're going to get done in too. How this dude didn't get sniped by Secret Service is amazing to me. You know, I'm sure people say they missed on purpose or whatever. I'm not going to judge that because we don't have any information. When you judge things you have no information on, you are an ass clown and you shouldn't do it. We'll wait and see if we ever get any information. And trust me, we will, because just like in the other event, there's going to be a lot of people on the inside start leaking information. There are people very upset about this inside Secret Service. And that's why Dan Bongino, who I'm not a huge fan of, but I like him overall, but that's why he's been such a great source of information about this shit, because he has connections inside Secret Service because he used to be an agent. So there's a fraternity there. He's in the media. He's big time. He's also alt media. He's an owner on Rumble. He can get information out, et cetera. And so he's a natural funnel for that leakage to occur. So we need to keep an eye on this. But the point I'm making is everybody that does anything does a risk-reward ratio in their mind. And your odds of successfully shooting a president of the United States and escaping, not dead yourself and not being apprehended, are about 1 billion to 1. That's why it's actually so rare. I'm sure there were scum out there that wanted to kill Obama. I'm sure there were scum out there that wanted to kill George W. Bush, right? Junior, right? I'm sure there were people that wanted to kill Clinton. And if they thought they could get away with it, they would have tried. When people reach a point where they're willing to try to do this shit, and they know this person is covered, right? And like in this case, like maybe the kid realized how lackadaisical Secret Service was. Maybe he just got lucky. But when people looked at that, you think, well, okay, look how easy it is. I don't think anybody would think that way now. Like, you know what they've done. They've brought up a hell of a lot more on the Trump detail. They can't afford for it to happen now. They wanted it to happen. Now they can't afford for it. I'm talking about the agency itself, Secret Service. I'm not talking about the deep state as a total. Like, they want it to happen. But when people are willing to go take this risk, we've crossed over a point where people are no longer behaving rationally. This is not a rational risk to take. You have to really believe he really is a Nazi. He really is Hitler 2.0. He's really going to be a dictator and never leave office. And the Supreme Court really said he can do anything he wants. All lies amplified by the media. All lies amplified by the media. All motherfucking lies being amplified by the media. Trump should sue every fucking anchor, every major personality that repeated those lies for two attempts on his life personally as individuals. That's what he should do. He probably won't. But it's what he should do. We are on a really dangerous edge of the cliff right now. And I want to show you, and I'm not going to play this because it's Putin, and he's speaking Russian, and there's no translator. There's just closed caption at the bottom. But I posted this over the weekend. And what happened here is that a reporter asked Putin, and I'm sure it's set up. You're like, that didn't just naturally happen. I don't care. I care if the words coming out of the man's mouth are true. And if he actually has bite to go with his bark, which I know that he does. And basically said, the Ukrainians keep asking the West for permission to strike deep inside Russia with their long-range missiles that they've been given. And Putin's response, the short version is, let me explain something to you. This is he's talking to the reporter. It's not permission. These are not missiles, these long-range precision strike munitions. They're not like you point it at a thing and push a button and it just goes. It requires a satellite system to identify the target, specify the target, and remain in communication from the time the missile launches until it impacts. That's how these systems work. The important part in that, the Ukrainians do not have a single fucking satellite. They do not have a space program. They do not have the ability to identify the target and do command and control operations with the target from the time the missile launches till it lands. And so Putin's response to this is then, therefore, if one of these fucking missiles leaves the Ukraine, you know, Kyiv or some shit, and ends up striking something deep inside of Russia accurately, it's not permission. It was done by NATO and or U.S. forces. You would need our capabilities to enact the use of the missile. It's not a fucking V2 like World War II where the Germans just kind of pointed it at London and went, oh, okay, and see where it lands. That's not how these things work. These are the latest technologically advanced long-range missiles that work in coordination with space assets. So he's like, so you do this, and I consider NATO, the entire thing, directly involved in this conflict instead of just supplying munitions. Okay. Russia is the number one manufacturer of weaponry in the world, and they have the largest stockpile of nuclear weapons in the world. Maybe we shouldn't be fucking with this. For what? What do we get out of this by continuing to do this? Do you think if we allow them to strike a few deep targets inside Russia, Russia's going to be like, oh, we quit? Do you think that's the outcome you're going to get? So why are you fucking with something that can't possibly give you the results you want that's really, really dangerous? And it's because these people are so fucking arrogant. They believe that they can get away with it. They believe that they can do this. I think maybe they'll believe that he won't strike back in some way. And I don't think we would go immediately from we enable the Yukis to hit something, you know, a couple hundred, 500 miles inside Russia accurately to global thermal nuclear war. Hopefully not. I really don't think we would. I don't think Putin wants that any more than we do. But you know what could happen? There's a couple things that could happen. Number one, Putin might say, you know what? I could have made Kyiv into a parking lot a long time ago. Fine, fuck it. And you don't think he can? We have air defense artillery there. Yeah, and I talked to the guy that's one of the top people in that MOS in the Army to find out exactly what we have there. And we do have there. Very good. Top of the line capabilities. Every one of those missiles is $1 million. Every one's $1 million. But here's more. Oh, yeah. When they came here to the United States, the guys that run those systems in Ukraine to, like, learn how to run those systems, you know, the United States Army didn't have anybody that spoke fucking Ukrainian. So they had people that spoke Russian to act as translators. This is like Portuguese and Spanish. It's very similar, but it's not the same. So they're not highly trained. They've run those systems on automatic, and they're limited. Like, you can't, like, they call it an Iron Dome, but that's a misnomer. You can't cover everything. So you pick your highest value targets, and you cover those, and you have limits. And they run on fucking, like, automatic. They have, like, the easy button for it. They just turn it on, and it defends things. You know what that led to? So we decided, hey, let's give them some F-16s. What could go wrong? Turns out they took our $65 million plane and our million-dollar missile that we all paid for and gave them, and they shot down their own fucking F-16 with their fucking Patriot. Woohoo! We're winning. That's winning, isn't it? Yeah. Winning, right? Yeah, that's what we did. That's the people we think we're helping in all this. All we've done is get almost 1 million Ukrainians killed in 3 years. That's all we've accomplished here. It is time for us to get out of the way. How does that tie into the Trump assassination attempt? I'm going to tell you what Trump's real plan is for Ukraine. And he can't say it because it would probably cost them the election. And the other side can't say what it is Because it might actually, if it came from them, cost them the election, even though it's the same thing. I know it sounds crazy, but if the other side said it, then there's a lot of people that might be like, well, maybe that's what we should do. And we're talking about an election, it's going to come down to seven states and a few thousand votes. Right? So either side is worried of doing this. But here's the plan. You know what? We're not paying for anything anymore. We're not supporting you anymore. So you better get to the fucking negotiating table with the Russians and talk to them. But we'll support you a little bit if you do that. But we're not going to keep an open-ended checkbook anymore. We're not doing this anymore. Now, if Trump says that publicly, now, it will be used against him. He's a tool of Putin. He's a Putin stooge. You know, Putin made him his bitch. Putin's interfering in election, blah, 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 blah. Russia, 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 all over again. So he can't say it. Do you know why I think that's what he's going to do? Because it's the only thing he can do. When he says, I'll have that war done before I even take the oath of office, because as soon as the election's over, the transition begins, other governments know who they're going to be dealing with. They start having this dialogue back and forth, and he's going to have that conversation with fucking Zelensky. And Zelensky's going to be like, fuck, we're fucked. So he's going to start that process, and he's probably going to run off to some villa with U.S. citizenship that we paid for and gave him again. With all the money that he's grifted, he'll live out the rest of his life in some tropical paradise somewhere, and Ukraine will be turned over to fucking BlackRock and Brown & Root to be rebuilt, and Halliburton. Watch and see. If he wins. If he doesn't win, or if these assholes keep escalating, we could turn this into a regional or even global conflict before the election even happens. I'm just saying, that's where we're on the road to. Let's move on to something that seems unrelated anyway. 40%, here's one of many articles I found backing up this claim. I found a post on X today from Anthony Pompliano for some chick I never heard of that writes for some publication I never heard of. It's for real estate people, like investors and whatnot. And I'm like, you know, maybe I'll pay for the article. And then you can't buy the article. You can't buy a month of access. You have to buy a year of access. And it was $299. Well, I'll tell you what, these paywall people, you guys really need to figure out fucking Bitcoin Lightning. You could have charged me $1 for that one article. I would have given you the $1. In any event, none of the like remove paywalls or anything worked because it's really a membership site. So it's designed to do this. But I was like, well, is the stat true? So I started looking up articles. Here's one that I found. Basically, right now, it's something in the range of like 39.9% of Americans, call it 40% of Americans, who own their own home, who are homeowners. And remember, we call a person a homeowner the day they sign the paperwork and move in, no matter how much money they owe, they're a homeowner. But almost 40% of people who do own a home now are living mortgage-free. And that was 2022, and this number keeps going up. And what people said when I shared this article and shared this fact today on X, and it's not untrue. Well, it makes sense. The baby boomers are aging. And as you age as a baby boomer, if you've been in your house a long time, you know, even if it's a 30-year mortgage, if you bought your house when you were 30 and you just didn't miss any payments, by 60, you're paid off. Right? And most people in the boomer generation who were ever going to buy a house had probably done so by the age of 30. Now, if they could have moved or whatever. But it just seems like there's a huge segment of that demographic. And the boomers are also quite frugal-minded. One thing I can say for them, like, they get a lot of shit, but they're not as different from Gen X as people make them out to be. They're maybe a little less technologically advanced because the older you are when a new technology comes out, the less likely you are to adopt it and use it. But in general, they grew up a lot like Gen X did. They just had parental oversight, care, and consideration, and were doted on a little bit more. But in the end, they grew up in the same environment, jumping bikes over their friends, busting their ass, being told to rub some dirt on it, it'll be okay. Like, boomers are pretty solid. And one of the things they did learn, they were better connected to, like, silent generation that remembered the Depression, GI generation that lived through it. They were better connected than we were. Like my grandparents were that way. But, you know, if I think of some of like my boomer relatives, they were connected to people like my great-grandfather, who really saw all of that. So they had that depression mindset put in them early, and even if they didn't look like they were doing it because they rebelled like crazy in the 60s and the drugs and everything else, when it came, like, people usually come back to where they're planted to some degree, they've been pretty damn smart with their money. A lot of them don't have a lot of money, but they have paid for cars. They have paid for houses and things like that and decent jobs. So that would seem to make sense. And the baby boomer is a large number of people, a large demographic of people. And the vast majority of that 40%, like 75% of the 40%, are 65 or older. So they're full-on boomers, right? They're from young to elderly boomers. Makes sense. But what's always kept that from being the case relative to the economic sentiment of the country, so you didn't have this continuous rise and less open mortgages, if you want to call them that, was that younger generations were buying. So we might look at this and say, this is great. This is great because the more people that own their homes outright, the more stable the housing market, the more stable the economy, the less catastrophic consequences there are to a recession. People are able to stay in their homes, especially the elderly, which aren't able to have a good income anymore. That means they can exit the workforce and make room for the young. It all sounds great. But why? Something I always teach people in every situation, do a Nicole Sauce. But why? Because young people aren't buying fucking houses. It should be that, I'm not saying it should be like morally or ethically or the right way, but just from a mathematical standpoint, as people are exiting being mortgage holders, new buyers should be becoming new mortgage holders at a similar rate anyway. Not that, and if you look at the graph, it's pretty extreme, the rise. And it didn't all start with COVIDs either, guys. This graph goes back to like 2010, and it's every year more. And those were some of the good years when mortgage rates were still low. Now it's even more the case. The other thing that's going on now is there's starting to be more and more people holding mortgages over kind of the magic number that the idiots at the economists decided were important of 6%. So that means more people are biting the bullet and becoming homeowners with these elevated interest rates, which historically aren't that elevated. The problem with a 6% mortgage today, or a 7% mortgage, or as high as 8%, isn't the percentage itself. I've defended the boomers before with this fact. The average mortgage interest rate in the late 70s to early 80s was between 12 and 18 fucking percent. Those people would have creamed in their jeans for a 6% mortgage. The problem is the artificially low interest rates on mortgages for over a decade vastly overvalued the housing because people don't worry about what's the cost of the house. They worry about what's the cost of the payment. So now we're in this stuck hole that we're in with reasonable interest rates, maybe a little bit high, but overvalued property, and those two things don't go together, and it's crushing first-time home buyers. So what does Kamala, what does Cackles want to do? Let's just give people $25,000 to buy a house. Okay, so you just raise the price of every house on the fucking market 25 grand. That's what you've done. Let's not actually fix the problem. No, fuck that. Where are you going to get the money? Like, all this shit she says she wants to do, where are you going to get the money? We're going to give new business owners $50,000. First of all, I don't believe you. Second of all, where are you going to get the money? It's a tax credit. Well, they don't make any fucking money. So either it's a deduction, which won't matter, and that's not what it is, or it's an actual credit where they actually get money when they pay their taxes. Where are you going to get the money? We're going to print it. This also makes the problem worse. Do you know what the number one problem with housing today really is? Inventory. There's not enough houses for the market to sell houses to be competitive enough to correct the overvalue in real estate that we have today. And it's a double-edged sword because anybody leveraged as an investor, if that underlying value starts to come down, they can get wiped the fuck out. But there's another problem, and I've talked about it before, and I'm telling you it's the biggest problem. It's not the federal government. There's plenty they get blamed for. But local governments have caused this more than any other form of government known to man. At the county level, go look up how many counties now have minimum square footage requirements for new built homes. You know, if you are a young couple, maybe you're going to have a kid or two. What do you need for a first house? What are you thinking? Three bedroom, two bath. Typical standard suburban home in America today. How many square foot is that going to be? 1,200 to 1,500 square foot, maybe 1,600 square foot. That's what it's going to be. And it's a completely reasonable size for a young couple. You have two kids, you got a master bedroom. I'm not calling a fucking primary, you woke fucks, by the way. You got a master bedroom and you got two kids' bedrooms. That's fine. Most people, and we're going to find out here in a second, aren't planning on having many kids today anyway. So that's all you really need. And how many of those homes are available? Very few, and most of them are older. Tarrant County, Texas, 2,250 square foot minimum size for a new build. Johnson County, Texas, most of it's rural, 2,500 square foot. Dallas County is in that 2,500 square foot range, so I'm not exactly sure what it is. I didn't look it up this morning. So those are three of the biggest counties, largest population centers in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Denton County has them too. They're over 2,000. It's like 2,250, right? This is most of the people that live in Dallas-Fort Worth with over 6 million people, the whole metropolis together. They all have these restrictions. So builders can't build starter homes. This is supposed to protect the tax base. This, whenever you hear protect home values, protect the tax base, translate it to what they're really saying. We want to make sure your fucking kids can never afford a house. That's what they mean. We do not want the real estate market to correct itself because we've already borrowed a bunch of money through bond initiatives that you morons voted for and said we could. And it's all leveraged against real estate taxes. And if the underlying value of the tax base goes down, we're not going to have any money. So we're in this huge trap, huge trap. And as much as I don't want the federal government telling local markets what to do, I would say this is a violation of people's rights. Honestly, I would push for some sort of amendment or something that says you can't tell a person how big their house has to be. I don't think it's right. I think if I buy a piece of land and I want to build a house on it and I want to build a 200 square foot house, that's my fucking business, not yours. Oh, it'll hurt the value of other houses. How? Right now, there's nothing. There's no option. There's no house there. This is destroying. This is the thing. All these young people, I'll never own a house. I'll never own a house because Trump. Trump was president for 4 fucking years. 4 years. These other people have been in control for longer than you have been alive. But somehow it's all his fault. This is ridiculous. When people say, well, it's Biden's fault. Biden was a senator for most of his time in government. I don't think he really got to make a decision left, right, or center under Obama because Obama basically just stuck him there. Right here, just go fuck off and make money in China and Ukraine. Right. Like he wasn't an active participant in that. Right. He's been president for 3.5 years and he doesn't even know how to eat his friggin' oatmeal anymore without assistance. This is a problem created by the system itself, but again, mostly it has been created by local governments. All these young people should be asking their county commissioners, their town councils, why the fuck can't we have 1,300 square foot houses? You want to get involved in politics, do it at the local level, and that's where to start. If you're a young person right now and you want to know why you can't afford a house, go find any place builders are building new houses, if you can, and tell them you want to buy a 1,300 square foot house, and then sanity check my claim. And when they tell you they don't have any, ask them why. They'll tell you. If the person says they don't really know, you're too low in the organization. Say, who do you work for? I need an answer to this. I need to know why I can't get a 1,350 square foot house. Like, that's all I need. I need a three bedroom, two bath house. Why can't I get one? I'm telling you, probably I don't have a hard factual statistic. I'm pulling this out of my ass. But based on a cursory look, I bet you more than 50% of counties have restrictions like that. And I bet you almost all the counties with what you would call, you know, reasonable population levels, the places people live. I'm sure nobody gives a shit how big your house is in some county in Colorado that has 150 people in it. But I could be wrong because we had some of the most onerous regulations like that with the guests we had out of a rural county in Colorado. But I'm sure there's places you don't have to worry about it. But nobody lives there. There's not a parasite class that has literally built their income on taxing property there. But where there is, boy, if they want to give themselves a raise, all they have to do is just keep inching up. And every problem we have looks just like that. It's the same pattern. It's the same pattern. Why are degrees so expensive? Because we gave everybody a pathway to a degree, even stupid kids. You can get out of college now with a C average, and or get out of high school now with a C average and get to college. I was a high schooler not that long ago, 30, 35 years, whatever it is. You know what you got if you got out of high school with a C average in 1989? Fucking a trip to the car wash to work at the car wash cleaning windows. Maybe you could get into a lower end community college. That was about it. Now you can go to fucking big time 4-year universities and get money. Get money to go. So what do the colleges do whenever they want to give everybody a raise or put in an ability? It's raise tuition. It doesn't matter. They can borrow it. Like, think of how manipulative you can be to an 18-year-old. You won't even have to make a payment for 4 or 5 years. The longer you stay in school, the longer you can borrow money without paying it back. Then it'll be controlled. You only have to pay a little tiny amount at a time. That's how you end up 65 years and you're old and you're still paying. You're paying student loans while you're collecting social fucking security, if it still exists when you get there. This is the same shit they've done in every market. And I know I sound like a broken record with this. It all goes back to 1971. Go look up the website. What the fuck happened in 1971? Look at the number of administrators in education. Skyrockets. Look at the cost of tuition for colleges. Skyrockets, 1971. Number of administrators in the medical industry, skyrockets. Number of administrators in the insurance space, skyrockets. Every problem we have, skyrockets on the day we untethered from the last vestiges of the gold standard. That's not like, hey, we should go back to the gold standard. This is just the consequences of 50-plus years of ignoring economic reality and creating artificial signals to the market. You have to understand that, okay? The way I would make a decision when I was running regular corporations is to look at the market. How many people are hiring? What is the projections for hiring next year? Those companies, because we used to be in contract recruiting placement, right? So we placed contractors with companies. So we would go to them and say, well, how much activity do you see in build outs, retrofits, all that stuff next year? And they would give us a number, a set of numbers, and we would drop that into our model, and we would build our teams based on that. We would start looking for recruits, et cetera. Well, where did they get the number? Well, they were looking at the larger economic indicators coming from the United States Government Statistics Department that was looking at the numbers reported from gross revenue across the whole spectrum. And it's the best number we had. We knew it was flawed, but it was the best that we could work with because it was the closest thing to real we had. It was how many people are spending how much money where. But when we made money cheap, we fucked that signal up. We corrupted that signal. We made that signal all but worthless, right? Because if I said to you, are you going to go out tomorrow and buy a $30,000 car? And you have, if you knew that you had to go out and write a check for $30,000 and no 100 cents and hand that check over, most of you would say no, because even though that sounds like a good price on a new car now, I don't have $30,000. But if I could say, would you pay $380 a month for a car? Most of you would say, I wish we could. But when you could, you did. All of this was built on that kind of cheap, rapid monetary inflation. And now this is the, you're right, plant propagation is saying there's 0% bank reserves now. That is true. During COVID, they made the final change in that. A bank needs no percentage of reserves to loan out as much money as they want, which is all created by you taking the loan in the first place. And we can't figure out what's economically wrong. So we artificially create shortages of supplies and a primary human need, housing. We make money to buy housing super cheap. We drive up the housing inventory price that's available. Then we change the cheap formula and make it expensive to buy a house. And we go, I don't understand. Oh, they understand. They know everything I told you, and they don't give a fuck. Never forget that. Now, on that note, we have another crisis that's coming, and that is people are deciding not to have children. And everything I just said is a big part of why. A big part of why. I actually see there's multiple huge reasons for this, but the headline for those not on the video, this is from The Hill, very much a left-wing publication. One in four younger Americans is not planning to have children due to finances. And for some reason, they have Cackles and Orange Man debating in a video on the top of this, even though it has nothing to do with it because, well, that's what you do when you're in the media today. You just throw shit at people. But the basic conception here is that many young Americans, so these are Gen Zs that are old enough to be thinking about this, right? So like high school grad level and a little bit older is the oldest Gen Zs right now. And then your millennials, especially your younger half of the millennial generation, your people that are 25 to 35-ish right now, where they, you know, like they still have time to become parents if they want to. One in four are basically saying, nope, I'm not going to do it. When they're asked why, the number one answer they give is the economy. I can't afford to have kids. I remember growing up and hearing people say all the time, if you wait to afford to have kids, you'll never have kids. And I think there's truth to that. In theory, nobody can afford to have kids unless you're a welfare person. You get more money for every kid. Like, that's about the only way you can afford to have kids. Kids are expensive. But it's more true now than it ever was. So that's part of it. Why would I have kids? I can't even buy a fucking house. You know, reading back to our last one. But there's another side of this. They have destroyed the minds of young people. They really think we have 10 years and we're all dead. It doesn't matter how many times you show them the press release from the Associated Press that says we have 10 years before it's catastrophic and there's nothing we'll be able to do. And the date on that fucking press release, does anybody know what it is? 1989. Now, here's the thing. All of this climate change bullshit is all based on mathematical models. People that can't solve the mathematical equation 1989 plus 10 equals X, okay? And can't get a right number from that and go, hey, wait a minute, something's off here. I don't trust the rest of your math, right? I don't trust you doing complex algorithms to predict the weather 50 years in the future if you can't do 1989 plus 10. And you can't do 2024 minus 1989 and then take those two numbers and find the difference between them. I don't trust you. You see, like, I think that's a pretty rational, logical stance to have on this. But these young people don't believe this. They believe what they're told, and they're being indoctrinated into this shit. I'm so glad we got my grandkids out of public school. My grandson was in, like, second grade. My wife picks him up from school. They're driving home. He starts fucking crying. He's a little kid, you know. He's second grade. You're pretty little. You're, like, 8 years old. And so my wife's like, what's wrong? He said, we're hurting the planet. My wife said, what? What do you mean we're hurting the planet? Well, we have a big car. My teacher said big cars hurt the planet. The kid's fucking 8 years old. So my wife, being really smart and not being like me, I'm like, I want to go tell your teacher she's a fucking idiot and stop talking to you like that. My wife just says to him, how do you think your teacher gets to school? When you look at the parking lot, where all the teachers park, are there lots of big cars in the parking lot? He's like, well, yeah. She goes, then do you think they really believe what they're telling you? Now, the sad thing is they probably do, and they don't make the connection. They want you to do it, but they can't do it because they're heroic teachers who don't wear capes that have to buy a big car, I guess. That's how that works, you know. This nonsense, right? So if you start programming, and we've been doing it in earnest since about just when I got out of the education system. This really ramped up in the 90s is where they made the change. Because remember what I was taught. But when I was in eighth grade, I was told there would be no oil at all. Not peak oil. No oil in 30 years. It was in a textbook. I remember it. And that textbook had a publication date in 1979. 35 years of oil. So it was about 30 years of oil left when I was in eighth grade. That's what they told me. Total bullshit. I didn't believe it because I went home and told my dad about it, and he said, she ain't. They're nuts. He said, go look up known oil reserves. You had to go to a fucking library back then, use a Dewey Decimal System and card catalog to try to find this information. But when I did, and I found out how much oil we knew about and not even what we would discover, I stopped worrying about it. Most kids wouldn't do that. These kids are programmed in this shit. So they really think every single person is making the earth sicker by being here. Why would you expect those to be people that are like, I want to have three kids? When I was a kid, that was kind of the dream family. Mom, dad, nice house, picket fence, three kids. A boy and two girls and a boy. Like, any of those worked, right? And at least two. Maybe we won't have three, but at least two. Everybody wanted a couple kids. Now, kids are actually seen as a problem. By kids. Kids that haven't even grown up yet have already decided kids are the problem. You're still a kid yourself. By the way, I think you're a kid till at least 25, just to be clear. I wish you would grow up a little faster. I really do. I think that's possible. But today, intellectually, people are children to 25 and many older than that. Like, I've heard theories that we should now call young adulthood 25 to 45. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, just give people another crutch to put underneath them and make excuses about their lives. But we're having a population crash. And people think replacement theory is a conspiracy theory. First of all, just because something's a conspiracy theory doesn't mean that it's not right. Okay? But I don't even think this is a conspiracy theory, because a conspiracy theory is something that people try to keep quiet and try to hide. I think if you are willfully and intentionally getting young people to choose through a myriad of ways, economic contraction, and then this psychological bantering to have less or no children, at the same time you keep bringing in massive numbers of immigrants from societies that crap out kids like frickin' rats, because they do. I'm not saying the people are rats. I'm saying most of these immigrant societies reproduce really, really fast. They're still at high reproductive rates. Then the idea that you're trying to replace the current American in the next generation with some new form of American, I don't think that's a conspiracy. What else would it be? We're going to curtail the reproduction of American citizens, bring in people with high reproductive rates from countries with very different values than our own, and see what happens over the next 20 years. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think all of these new Americans that will be born here, and hence under our Constitution, will be citizens 20 years from now, when they're all old enough to vote, do you think they will share the ideals that made America what it was? I do not. Not because they're not worthy as human beings, but because the way we're doing it is ensuring that they will not adopt the values of their home country. And it wasn't so long ago that any country you ever went to, a pledge stating that you would do that was required to get in the door, as it should be. If you come to my house has rules. The neighbor may have different rules. Don't give a fuck what the neighbor's rules are. I don't give a fuck what the rules in your house are. I care about the rules of my house. If you can't follow the rules of my house, you don't get to come in. Simple, no? Very freaking simple. Very freaking simple. That's how countries work. That's how countries have always worked. Your loyalty, if you're going to come live in this country full-time permanently, even if you're just going to be a national, it's your kids that will be the next generation. Like, you can try for citizenship, but even if you don't get it, a pledge of loyalty to your new homeland. I will abide by the laws of this place that I have said I want to live in, and I will abide by the customs and cultures, even if I preserve my own. My first loyalty will be to my new homeland. Or get the fuck out. That's not very anarchist of you. That's actually very anarchist of me. That's how anarchist communities work. This is our shit. This is what we do. We're supposed to do anything we want. Yeah, but in our community, these are the things that we agree to as rules and regulations and laws for our community. You don't want to be part of it. No one will make you. No one will come out, throw a black hood over your head, throw you in the back of a Sprinter van, and bring you here against your will. But if you want to join with us, these are the things we agree to. Anarchy does not mean no rules. It means no rulers. Fuck off if you don't like it. Great way to run a country, too, by the way. Great way to run a country, too, by the way. And what are they doing? Instead of putting any controls on it, I know how we'll solve the border problem. I know. We'll give these fucking people an app they can put on their phone, and like they're on Travelocity, they can arrange a fucking flight into the interior of the country and not even go through border patrol. Straight past it to processing, and the border bill that Trump killed, all that was money to process more people faster. That's not pro or anti-Trump. That's pro-truth. That's all that. If you go look at that bill, there's all kinds of money for technology. There was no money in it to actually stop people. It was about fentanyl. That was how they tried to get the Republicans on board with it. You keep saying you want to stop fentanyl. Well, here's a whole bunch of equipment that will help us find more fentanyl. By the way, my brother owns a fucking company that makes it. No shit. I mean, that's really what was going on. So we have a pending population collapse. Moving on, like, we're not winning anywhere anymore as a country. And I'm surprised it took this long for us to really start losing. So as I mentioned in my intro segments, people in China now, at least in, because again, I only trust so much data from China. But people that live in, like, have regular jobs that we think of, like, you know, they work for Apple in China or something like that, make more money than the average American. The average Chinaman makes more money, not a lot more. Here's the numbers I worked out. The median income in China, depending on the source you get the information from, per individual, is $46,000 to $49,000 a year. If you look that stat up for the United States of America and you don't read carefully, which most fucking journalists don't because they just write shit, fuck, we're eating it, right? You would say that the average American median income is $75,000. Almost, not quite, but almost double, right? And that's a big difference. So when you price things in China in their currency and convert it to U.S. dollars, if you were being honest, you would then have to say, well, let's figure it based on average income and what that relates to in dollars. So I've seen that. You know, I saw a place, for instance, a few months ago that was in Thailand and how much you could buy for like $300,000 in Thailand. It was like a $2.5 million house here. But when you did the currency conversion, the income, and then cost adjusted it, it was like buying that house for $8 million if you lived in America. So it was bullshit. So I saw something left for China. I'm like, oh, they're playing this game again. When I looked it up, I found out the average Chinaman or China woman is making $46,000 to $49,000. By the way, in China, they know the difference between men and women. They're totally clear on what that is. I'm saying, like, just because a country does some things worse than us doesn't mean that they don't have some things better. And building upward mobility and income is happening much faster in China. If you compared these numbers 16 years ago when I started this show, the average Chinese person was living what we would consider poverty, even though they got by better than most people in our poverty situation. The U.S. median income is about $45,000, just a little bit less. Now, again, if you look it up, it'll say $75,000, but they play a trick. They play a trick on you. They say per household. What's a household? Husband and wife, the family would be a household. That would be one, you know, clearly identified household income. Well, how many households don't have two incomes now in that form? Almost all of them do. So I had to go through some effort to figure out the individual median income in America. So I didn't want to just divide 75 by two. I didn't think that was fair because there are households of one income in that number. But the number is about 45,000. But I want you to think about it in a totally different way that you probably haven't done yet. How many people are in China? And how many of them are income-earning adults? So what does the future look like at a GDP level for China as this continues? Number one economy in the world. Just the most basic fucking math. We're being regulated to second at best economically. We are headed for third world nation status. It won't look like a third world nation because of how much is already here, but is our infrastructure not already crumbling? Are not our once great cities turning into bullshit? I mean, who wants to go? Like, if I said to you, I mean, we're still at a point where they've been taken over by liberals, but they hadn't done all their damage yet. Like, I went to LA 15 years ago. There was a lot of homeless in certain areas, but overall, it was a pretty good place to be. It was kind of cool. I went to Seattle 20 years ago. I didn't see a single homeless person. I definitely didn't see anybody drugged out on the streets and needles laying on the side of downtown like you see now. I went to San Francisco back then. I didn't see people taking a shit in the middle of the street or on store stoops. Who wants to go to these places now? Do you really want to go to Seattle? Like, you might fly to SeaTac to be somewhere in the Northwest, but you're probably not going to hang out in Seattle. They're destroying everything. New York City. I worked in New York City in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was part of my territory. It was freaking amazing. Like, there were some parts that stunk and smelled bad and all. It's just the sheer number of people and whatever. Way too many cars and shit. Not a place I'd want to be, but it was the classic thing people used to say about New York City. Great place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. And I could also say I know certain people. I could see why they want to live here. I get it. I don't really think anybody wants to live there right now. I think people are stuck living there, and I think they'll rationalize and explain why it's still the greatest city in the world, but it's not. And what does its future look like if things keep going the way that they're going? Total fucking shitholes. So if your great cities are being destroyed, how long does your nation really have? Why do you think Trump wants to build 10 new cities? Who's going to live in them, though? Right? They're going to be freedom cities. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure it'll even happen. we are on a downward spiral, and there's not really any way out. We are now at a point of figuring out how to migrate through this catastrophe and rebuild. But we're not going to prevent it. And anybody that tells you is, anybody that tells you we are, there's only two possibilities. They're bald-faced fucking liars, or they're stupid enough to believe their own bullshit. Either way, you probably shouldn't listen to them. Next up today, homeschooling. I want you to really take in the headline of this article. Really take it in when I bring it up here for you in a second. Where have the children gone? Rise of homeschooling takes a transformative look on education. Where have the children gone? Plano School District is one of the wealthiest school districts in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Long time ago, I talked about these stupid freaking parents that want to spend $9 million to build a bridge over a ditch that you could have literally built, I mean, really nice for a couple thousand dollars. But everybody was involved, and there was like four homeowners associations involved, and ordinances and all kinds of crap, and the number they came up with, and this was like a little bitty ditch, $9 million. That was Plano. That was just to give you an idea of the kind of place we're talking about. Plano is a city, and the areas around Plano that I used to, I called them the Aspenites. The Aspenites are at Starbucks. They're all the really fucking rich women who don't work, who the second the temperature in the morning is below 60 degrees, they get decked out in $5,000 worth of winter clothing. They have like the knee-high boots with the tufts around them and shit and the leather coats and all, and they look like they're on their way to Aspen. That's why I call them Aspenites. That's where they live. Do you know what they announced this summer? They're closing six schools. Six. Supposedly they're not laying off any teachers. They're full of shit. What they're doing is they're letting people quit, retire, and leave and not hiring new people. My sister-in-law is a teacher. She's in Grand Prairie School District now. They have her literally in a fucking closet because they close so many schools. She does special ed. She only has like a small area. Probably an area the size of my office would be great. But she's in like basically a janitorial closet. They have like animal feed. I don't know what the fuck animals are feeding, but apparently they have like animal feed in there with her and no fucking air conditioning vent. In Texas, in the summer, teaching special needs children in a closet. Do you really think this isn't happening? Do you really think the stuff that I told you was going to happen isn't happening right now? Because it is. We have the college enrollment cliff hitting in full next enrollment period, 2025. The colleges have known about this for a decade. They've been shitting their bricks about it. I don't care how much you lower enlistment standards at this point, you're fucked. Too many kids are like, I'm not spending the money. I'm not signing myself away to a lifetime of debt to get a degree that I now can see multiple generations have them and they're worthless. On top of it, there's just not enough people. The number of people coming out of high school every year has been going down for years. And it's literally a cliff next year, the next graduating class. I looked up the graduating class. Now, it is a rural community and people have left. But when I was there, the number of graduates was growing because his other schools in the area were closing due to depression level towns. They were bringing them in. So, like, I would have graduated with something like 300 kids, and I graduated with, like, 420 kids, something like that. And the reason was my senior year in high school, they closed the school called St. Clair, and they took their senior class and dropped it in. I looked it up because I saw something on a thing about a graduating class in Potts. I'm like, okay, that's interesting because I went to school there. I look at this picture. We used to graduate – when I was in school, out on the football field, like in the stands, so there was room for everybody. They're in a fucking basketball gym. They're in a fucking basketball gym. I'm like, what the hell? Like, you got to understand something. Like, the basketball gyms in Plattsville High School are not big, okay? They're not huge. They're little. And they don't even fill up the freaking floor of the basketball court. So I looked it up. It was like 190 students graduated last year. 190 students. They went from over 400, it might have been closer to 450, honestly. I don't really remember. From about 450 in 30 years, they're down to under 200. And that's having multiple schools folded in. It's just people are leaving these smaller towns. People are not having as many kids. When I went to school there, most of the people I went to school with had two or three brothers and sisters. like one of my best friends had one brother. Another one of my friends, he had like two brothers. Another one of my really good friends, he was an only child, Kenny, I'm thinking of. I had two sisters. But as I go through and think of like girls I dated and stuff, they had sisters and brothers and stuff. Like most people in school had somebody that came before them or somebody coming up behind them. Now only childs are pretty common. So if you take 5 million students nationwide, because that's how many now, 5 million students who would otherwise be there out, while you have declining populations, but you know where we have more kids that need to go to school? All these immigrants, but they don't speak English. They're all in shithole areas. Many of them aren't even going to school because they can't learn. We have no plan for this. We brought in 20 million plus people and we built not one new fucking house. How's that going to work? How's that not make everything? Like, we are in serious shit, guys. Right? We are in serious shit and nobody's willing to accept it. This is a complete unraveling. This is your fourth turning. You're in it right now looking at it. If you've read the book, there's so much focus on war, right? World War II, Civil War. I'm sorry, Neil Stroud kind of acts like World War I wasn't a fourth turning, and it wasn't. Not if you want all the numbers to line up, right? Because then you only got 20 years between World War I and World War II. That's only one generation. What the fuck? Right? I'm telling you, war is not – but if we keep doing the shit we're doing with Russia, there may be a global fucking war, right? Or at least a very broad, larger regional one. But we are in a total breakdown catastrophe, and there is no fixing it. There's building a new system, which, by the way, that's what turnings are. When you get to that fourth turning, you literally have to completely rebuild society because it becomes so disheveled. And there's an evolutionary theory behind it. It's what keeps us innovating and advancing. But look at where we are. We have people that can't tell the difference between men and women. They want you to legitimately call a person a woman who has a dick. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it. They think it's okay to talk to children about this shit when they're in kindergarten, first, second grade. They're pumping hormones into children who are confused. They're doing literal surgery on minors. Right? A kid that can't get a tattoo can have their breasts removed. This is not okay. And don't tell me, I had one special child kept telling me it's not happening, and right in the middle of him telling me it's not happening, we have a guy being federally prosecuted under HIPAA for saying, hey, Baylor Medical Institution is doing this in Texas right now, even though it's against Texas law. And then the feds prosecuted him for HIPAA violation. He gave away no patient information whatsoever. He just gave proof that the practice was being done by doctors. He's still under federal prosecution. A country like this can't stand, right? You know, if you're in a fight with somebody with one leg, all you got to do is kick a knee, and they're done. We don't have any legs. We're propped up on stilts right now with fake legs, and they're not bionic. This is all going to come down really hard and fast. Gradually, then suddenly, the next 10 years are going to be awful in so many ways. But it's up to you to turn it into something good. But I also believe something else is going on. I think we are closer to a civil war right now than we've ever been in history, other than the 1860s when we actually had one. In some ways, I think we're in a totally different dynamic, though. The thing about the 1860s, as we headed to the Civil War conflict, it was very clear who was who. I'm sure there were some people in the South that were Northern sympathizers and vice versa and what have you. But they also had an option, which is, now that I know this conflict is coming, I'm just going to haul ass to the other side of things before it happens, right? And a lot of people did do that. And the smartest place you could have gone is the furthest north or south you could have got. Like that would have been the best thing you could have done for yourself, is get as far away from it as you could. If you were at an age where you weren't subject to the draft anyway, you could pretty much have avoided most of the problems in either direction. We won't have that today. It was real simple. Are you a slave state or a free state? And the Mason-Dixon pretty much did that, right? So it was clear where people stood, and you could tell me it wasn't about slavery. And I will tell you that slavery was the key cause, the preservation of slavery was the key cause in every Southern state's Articles of Secession. It's not because I say so. It's not because Professor CJ says so. It's because they said so. It was states' rights, but they wanted the states' right to a lot of things, but the most important to them was slavery. Yes, I know. Most of the Southerners that fought in the Civil War never saw a slave. Yes, just like today, the elite fucking control the commoner and used them as cannon fodder for their agenda. Don't disagree. Doesn't change the reality. My point is, you knew if you were in Pennsylvania what side you were on. Tell me that's the case now. My Texas! I love Texas. I love a lot of things about Texas. But we're about 60-40, liberal versus conservative. And our liberals are just as fucking lunatic as yours if you live in Massachusetts. They just don't have any power. They haven't had, a Democrat has not won a statewide race in Texas since, I think, 1994, Ann Richards, who then later lost to George W. Bush. Right? Or was it 1990 that she won? I don't know. Bush, the first year that Bush ran for governor in Texas, he beat her. She was the last statewide elected Democrat in the state of Texas. I mean, railroad commissioner, governor, federal senator, all of it. Statewide race has not been won by Democrats in Texas in this century. So when I say they don't have any power, I mean they don't have any fucking power. They're just as crazy. I mean, I've seen things on my next door when people get in political fights, and I'm just like, why are you fighting with your neighbor over this stupid shit? But all the crazy shit, the wokeism and all, they're all in on it. So they're here. They just don't have political power. Doesn't mean that they're not here in body count. We have a total breakdown in this country. It might look a lot more like Bosnia-Herzegovina than it will like the Civil War of the 1860s. By the way, you know what we're on the cusp of? The Fourth American Republic. These turnings all create new republics. Do you know what Gen X is? Do you know what the original term for the Gen X generation was? It wasn't Gen X. Gen X actually described a subset of boomers that came before Gen X. It was a self-assigned label. The media later assigned it to like the people that are 50 years old now. We were the 13ers. We were the 13ers. The 13th generation. Four make a cycle. Do the math. Figure it out. This would be the Fourth Republic, is what they call it in the book. The fourth turning, and the fourth turning is here, right? And this is a very important thing to understand about new republics or turnings or unravelings and rebuildings. There's a pretty good probability that you can predict the turnings, even if you're off by a generation. You have a short cycle, like Civil War was a short cycle. There was no fourth. There was a third turning. And that was when the Civil War, because there was a powder keg that had built that long. And then there was a impetus that caused it. But in general, you can predict the turnings. You can't predict the outcome. This will happen. Society will rebuild its institutions of government. Most of society will have confidence in those institutions, even if they're awful. Those institutions will grow. They will bloat. They will create a high for a brief period of time, about a half a generation, really. But a full generation will feel like it was in the high. Then you'll get an initial unraveling. That would have been the boomers' Vietnam era. Then you'll get this generation of people that just don't give a fuck, 13ers, Gen X. Then you'll get this coddled generation, millennials, that will be forced against their will to be a hero generation into complete falling apart and unraveling, because they'll be the ones that are in their 30s and 40s at the time that actually have the energy and the capacity and the influence to do it. And they will be aided by the asshole nomad generation that will now be in their 60s and 70s when it all comes to fruition, that will be the people willing to break the rules to get things done. But you don't get a guarantee that it makes things better, right? You don't get a guarantee that it makes things better. That's where we are. Now, I want to answer a couple questions and do a couple thank yous here. One, Bonnie Blue says, great podcast and great topics today. I hope some other regularly who are here will step up and tip too. Thank you, Bonnie. You don't have to do this all the time, really. Bonnie has always thrown me a few bucks. Thank you for that. You don't have to always be the one doing it. Legacy Farm and Homestead threw me $5 on a super chat and says, I'm an anarchist, but I'm voting for Trump. First time voting in 16 years. I'm hearing more and more of that. I think there is a huge potential if the Democrats are not capable of cheating enough to offset it, that Trump will become the second person in U.S. history to serve non-consecutive terms as president. I really think there's potential for it. It's not if the Democrats will cheat. It's will they be able to cheat sufficiently to overcome the fact that Trump will get more votes from an electoral college measurement anyway. Trump will probably lose the popular vote. He'll probably lose the popular vote. Just look at the populations of New York and California to understand that. And then look at the population of Texas, and I'm going to tell you about 45% of the vote in Texas will go to Democrats. So the three biggest states with population there, even Florida. Florida is reliably going to go to the Republicans, but there's still going to be a lot of Democrat votes that get added to the total, then take the Democrat states. And real simple, like, this is why our founders created the Electoral College. It's not white supremacy. It's to avoid tyranny of the majority. If you're young, you probably don't know what that means. You should look it up. Liberty Garden says, do you think Texas will secede? Probably. It will depend. I don't think it's if. I think it's what will be the catalyst that will cause it. This is also part of the fourth turning. So if you look at certain events, even though it's not technically considered a fourth turning, let's look at the World War One, which really you can't separate World War One from World War Two. I know they're different chapters in the book, but it's really one more long world war with a ceasefire in the middle, if you really look at it. What started the whole fucking thing? Some anarchist, who wasn't an anarchist, by the way, was just labeled an anarchist, went and popped the Archduke Ferdinand. Now, if somebody went right now and popped an Archduke somewhere, it's bad, I feel bad, but fuck them, right? I don't care. You know? Oh, no. Anyway, that would be the whole thing. No, we plunged the whole freaking of Europe and then eventually the world into global conflict in one of the bloodiest, in fact, at the time, the bloodiest war that had ever been fought, because some guy popped an Archduke. There was more to it than that. Of course, that's my point. There are things that can happen that if they happen, right, in one timeline or one point in history, one cycle of history, they will have a pretty muted effect, even if they're major things. And there's things that can happen at a perfect inflection point in history that should be relatively minor that have catastrophic consequences. Think about the assassination of JFK, right? We seem to think that there was this momentous impact of the assassination of JFK. And from a timeline perspective, like an alternative reality, like if Kennedy was still alive and had served out his term and gotten reelected, like it would have changed history. Sure, sure. But it wasn't the big impact people think. Yes, people cried. Yes, the media was like, oh my God, the president's been shot. Yeah. Conspiracy theories abounded, and many of them I think were actually accurate. But it didn't really change much. We didn't say, oh, now we need to go blow up Cuba, even though we blame the Cubans, right? Like, it didn't cause the United States to enter a world war. It kept us in Vietnam that Kennedy was trying to get us out of. But it wasn't like people were like, they killed Kennedy, let's go kill the Vietnamese. Like, it didn't work that way. Had this happened, let's say Reagan had been killed with ties to Russia in 1983, we may have very well ended up in a fucking world war. Pop Trump right now. Become successful. And see, that could be a catalyst. So I think we are ripe for something that normally wouldn't cause a major unraveling to cause one because the setup is there, right? Like, here comes the fucking 9/11 conspiracy people, but if I take out a support in a building, nothing might happen. But if I take out a different support, and only one, the whole building can come down, right? It all depends on which support I knock out. Or I can knock out support A and the building will stand, and I can knock out support B and the building will stand. I can do B and C or A and C and the building will stand. But if I do A and B, that's how we are in society right now. We have everything in place for major catastrophic consequences. What could cause Texas to secede? It could be as simple as Kamala Harris wins the presidency and people really believe, not even like last time, but really believe there was cheating. That they really believe that the election is invalid. That there's enough sentiment here right now for that to be the catalyst. I still think it would take another 3 or 4 years for it to go through, but it certainly could happen. There's a lot of things that could cause that. I see a point where the other side is, let's say Trump wins. You know, there was a lot of rattling and mouthing off about California seceding. Go ahead, fuck it, I don't care. The rest of the country may not feel that way, but I don't care. Like, Trump could win. And people are, think of how worked up people are. Think of how irrational people are over Trump. Like, people will look you straight in the face and say, the Supreme Court said he can order SEAL Team 6 to kill anybody he wants and stay in office forever. This bears no resemblance to reality. That is not what the Supreme Court said at all, right? I know what Kinti Jackson said, but she's a fucking idiot that doesn't belong in a position like Supreme Court justice, okay? Like, that was a justice being political, which should never happen. But then what happens? All the mouthpieces amplified it. These people really believe he's the second coming of Hitler. If you think the second coming of Hitler has taken over your country, why wouldn't you try to shoot him on the golf course? Or why wouldn't you advocate for your state getting the hell out of the country being run by Hitler number two? Why wouldn't you? This is, and the media did this. And they knew precisely what they were doing while they were doing it. And when I say they, I don't mean the run-of-the-mill reporter who just reads whatever they put in front of them and doesn't really know their ass from a hole in the ground. Because most of these journalists don't know, they don't know what journalism is, let alone the subject matter they're covering at all. All they are is suits and pantsuits that read scripts. So I'll give some of them an ignorance pass. But the people actually that are doing the programming, that are deciding what to run with, that are coming up with the phraseology, the people that are saying we're all going to say weird at the same time, know what they're doing. The people that are going to say Russian interference, the people that are going to parrot, you know, X number of people signed a letter that says, which means absolutely fucking nothing, by the way, and never has worked out the way those people that signed those letters, and no one's ever held them accountable for being wrong, right? The people amplifying that know exactly what they're doing. It's like they want this to happen. But is it uncommon in civil wars for both sides to, at least people in both sides, to want it to happen? Because what does everybody think? Well, my side will win. My side's right, and the side that's right always wins. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. Yes, I think we probably will at some point, unless if we get through the fourth turning and the systems do get rebuilt before it happens, then maybe confidence gets restored in the institutions of government. And I know hearing me say that, you're like, did somebody kidnap Jack and put a double in place? I'm not saying I'll believe it. It just matters if the majority of people believe it. And the majority of people already believe bullshit, so assuming that they might believe other bullshit is not that complicated. And when I say the majority, I don't mean like 51%. I mean like 80 to 90% of people in this country believe absolute bullshit. Republicans and Democrats both believe absolute bullshit. I hear it all the time, bullshit about the other side. Like, that's bullshit. You're a libtard. No, I'm a truth speaker. That's all. I believe in facts. Antonio says, off-topic question, if you did not have a family or family to worry about, would you do anything different in this day and age? If so, what? I would really be a lot more likely to leave this country. There is a really good entrance program right now, especially if you have income and you have independent income from location into El Salvador. And it's not that El Salvador is the greatest place to be. It's that once you have a second passport, your ability to travel and work in other places is hugely different than being an American with an American-only passport. The best place to have citizenship, if you're going to live where your citizenship in the world, despite all our fucked up problems, right now is still the United States of America. There's more people that want to be here than anywhere else, and there's a reason. They're also changing that, right? But it is the worst passport to have if your goal is to work and move nomadically throughout the world and go wherever it's best at any given time. You would be far better off with an El Salvadoran passport if you wanted to go live in Spain for, I don't know, a while, or if you wanted to go to Colombia or Argentina or wherever. Right? I wouldn't go to those places. Then don't go there. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you want freedom of movement in the world and freedom of commerce in the world. Being stuck with just a U.S. passport is the worst place to be. I don't have a second passport. It's a significant investment. I don't see with my family roots ever having that level of freedom. But if you know, I have no connection really at all back to my side of the family, right? My parents, my sisters, my uncles, I have almost no connection to those people at all. And I won't get into why. I just don't. So if I were 50-something, well off financially, which I am, not tethered to this location, I would seriously consider becoming a national of some other nation. I don't have to be a citizen. I just want to be able to get a passport issued by their authority where I can travel and do business as that. That is the biggest thing I would likely do different. Or if I chose not to do that and stayed here, I would get way the fuck out of Dodge right now. Like if, you know, I'd probably be living somewhere in like rural Tennessee where when I say I'm going to go to the store, it's like a 1.5 hour trip because that's the closest. Like I would live that far out, like Unabomber style, middle of nowhere. The only reason I wouldn't say like Montana or Wyoming, as I've gotten older, I've realized how much I fucking hate the cold. And so I want a short winter, but it would be something like that. Somewhere with lots of water, lots of trees, lots of resources and a lot less people. Not because I'm running away from all of this problem. I would be doing that because I would just prefer the lifestyle that would afford me to be able to do, to be able to get far enough away from these people to really not give a fuck. Because I already halfway don't give a fuck what they do. The location I'm in right now is pretty damn strategic to give my family what they want and me what I want at the same time. That's why we're here. Anarchy says, thanks for always for the great videos, Jack. TSP on. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. A bunch of other comments came in while I was handling those. I don't have any more time today, so I can't go back through them. I do want to let you know about the backyard cover crop course, which I've kind of mentioned a few times, but I haven't really gone deep into on the air. And since we're over an hour and a half already today, I won't go that deep with this. But homefoodsystems.com is the site we set up for these courses. And the backyard cover crop course is now officially launched. We kind of soft launched it last week. I even put out a video today going through like some sample slides so you can get a better look at it, what the back office is like. And I did an article today. It tells you all the things that you'll learn. Here's just a couple of them. How about the 17 best cover crops for fall and winter and the 15 best cover crops for spring and summer? They're in there and they have deep dives in every species. My sweet 16 of flowers and summer interplanting, that's in there. How to convert seeding specifications in your gardens to square footage. So you'll find that you'll get a seeding recommendation for 1,000 square foot or by the acre with a lot of these crops. I give you the math that you need to make that conversion. It's stupid easy. Like when I tell you how to do it, you're like, oh, that makes perfect sense. It won't be hard at all. If you want to, you could even make a spreadsheet, but you probably don't need to. And exactly how to formulate your own seed mixes. But the bigger thing is I give you the why of all these things. I would say watch the video if you want to learn more, but we get deep into strategy, tactics, and techniques. And the big thing is I don't believe in what I call instructor dependence, okay? And what I mean by that is I don't want you to take my course and turn around and be dependent on me, right? I don't want that. I want you to take the course and be empowered. I want you to be able to go out and be like, fuck, I know what to do now. I know exactly what to do and how to do it. Doesn't mean I won't answer questions, but I don't want you like you've taken the course, you've got good grades on all the exams, you've got your certification, and you're still sitting there going, but I don't really know what to do in my climate or my area. I give you a way to narrow down your context through a series of questions that will give you the exact recommendations that you need with an understanding that if you choose rye versus triticale, it's not that big a deal. Like I will make you comfortable with not being so concerned which grass do I use. Okay, pick an annual grass, wheat, rye, barley, triticale. Here's what to look for. Here's what to determine. How do you want to term? Like all of the information is there. It really is in some ways, as this image indicates for those on the video, like playing chess against yourself. But it's just answering questions to yourself in an honest way. Last but not least today, if you want to support the show and the work that I do, please consider doing your online shopping starting at tspaz.com where you'll find all my product reviews Everything's available either at Vavor.com or Amazon.com. Today's item of the day is back again. I had it last month because it was on sale. They just put it on sale again this morning, so I brought it back. It's the Frigidaire Portable Ice Maker. It's stupid simple to use. You plug it in. You set the size of ice you want with a push of a button. You pour water in it. It makes ice. You dump the ice in the freezer or you leave it in the machine. That's it. And $87 for the black stainless steel model. Fits right on a typical countertop, no problem, and it starts working fast. Your first ice starts coming out about 12 minutes after you fill it up and plug it in, and after that it'll be about 8 to 9 minutes per cycle, dropping like, I think it's 9 ice cubes per drop. Really a great machine, definitely a prepper item, and very low draw on power. A little bit of a surge on startup, but once that's over with, it runs on very low wattage because of how it works. It doesn't have a refrigerator, freezer-type thing in it. It actually cools the elements the ice forms on, and the ice keeps itself cold in basically a cooler that it drops into. So that means if you're running it off backup power, it has a lot of resiliency, and it's much easier to make ice than to keep your refrigerator cold. If we can make ice, we can make sure all our food's good. It's also a medical prep, and it's just nice to have ice on demand. If you look at what ice costs now, like, what does a 10-pound bag of ice cost? It's like $3 for friggin' water that's frozen, right? I've seen places with $4 for a 10-pound bag of ice. I've seen places where it's still $2.99, but the bag's like 6 or 7 pounds of ice. That's not very much ice. So just start making your own ice. If you regularly buy ice, and you'll be ahead no time at all. Absolutely. Anyway, with that, I'm going to wrap things up today. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope nothing that I said you. What is the price? The price is $87, Jake. I hope nothing I said today puts you in a state of fear. We are fucked. There's no reason to be in a state of fear. We can get through all this. There is that wild card out there of true, like, apocalyptic level World War III shit. I want to say that I think it's possible, but I don't think it's probable. I think we are still in a place where there is the mentality of mad, mutually assured destruction. My concern with Russia is I think Russia has something on their doctrine that we really don't. Intermediate nuclear war. The United States has always been kind of like, we have all this nuclear shit, and it's mutually assured destruction, and if they go, then we go, and we wipe their ass out as quick as possible. Russia's defense doctrine is there is a place for, we're going to nuke this, and this to show that we mean business. And Russia also has capabilities to do things, like I said, no nuclear weapons whatsoever, level Kiev. And people in dire situations do stupid shit. That's Ukraine right now. Ukraine is fucked. Ukraine is owned outright at this point financially by BlackRock and the Rothschilds. Like, they literally were going to be bankrupt by the end of this month, and the people that own them said, it's okay. It's okay. We'll accept the loss on the bonds. It's okay. That's because we own you now. And so I don't think they care how wiped out the place gets. And I really think that, again, I'll just hit that again, because I didn't say one other option that they have. I think Russia will level Kyiv if we fuck around with these long-range missiles, and it will be us. Please understand, what Putin said is true. Those missiles are not push a button and it goes to Leningrad or whatever. Like, they need sophisticated space operational satellites to function. The Ukrainians do not have the capability to use those weapons. They're not asking for permission. They're asking us to do it for them, to make it happen. They might push the button, but everything that makes it work, we would be doing, or Germany would be doing. Germany said, by the way, fuck this, we're not doing it. We don't care what UK and the United States say. We're not fucking doing this, right? Germany has maybe a little more memory of shit being blown up, I guess. Yeah, so they said, we're not doing it, but we might do it. But there's another option. What did I say it requires? What did Putin say it requires for these long-range missiles? Satellites. If you don't think Russia has the capability to take out satellites, I don't know what to tell you. And that could be really catastrophic for U.S. operations around the world, for us to start losing satellites that we rely on to conduct other operations. So you don't have to strike a town. You don't have to blow up a hospital, whatever. You start taking out those satellites, it compromises, like, U.S.-Africa communications for AFRICOM operations of military. Just as one example, or Middle East operations. All at a time when Iran is on the edge of going to war with fucking Israel. Huh? Yeah? And don't think those back channel conversations aren't happening. No, Kalmar, we can fuck up your satellites. No, you're a tool of Putin. No, I just believe that if you have a weapon that works and you use it, it does the thing it's supposed to do. And taking out satellites is actually easy. They're pretty fragile. It doesn't take much to take out a satellite, guys. It's not like you can kick in the warp engines like Star Trek and run away and come back. There's no cloaking device. They know where all of them are. We know all of theirs. We could have a space war in this. Who knows? But in the end, what will be, will be. And that's something that as survivalists, as preppers, as homesteaders, as liberty lovers, we have to accept that there's a lot of shit that the average normie thinks they control by paying attention, by voting, by looking at it, by writing letters to Congress or what the fuck ever you think you're doing, right? You don't. Karen, your homeowners association cannot tell Russia what to do. San Francisco, that sounds like an overreach, right? San Francisco City Council, right? You can't order a ceasefire in Gaza. They really did that, okay? And they thought they did something. We don't have that kind of power and control. What we control is how we prepare and how we react and how we build resiliency for ourselves. If you keep doing that, you know, if you don't get the equivalent of being hit by the gravel truck like I've talked about for 16 years, you'll probably be able to get through it. With that, I'll catch you guys tomorrow with another episode. Something maybe a little less current events and a little bit more evergreen, a little bit more of doing for yourself and getting that done.
Gonna bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month.